Hi, I'm Deborah Lindad, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It is Thursday, May 7th, 2015, and it's a beautiful day here in Clearwater, Florida. Sun is shining, no rain, no breeze, just beautiful sunshine. We got a lot of sunshine here. So what we're going to be talking about today is household toxics, which we talk about every day, but we, from a little different perspective. My guest today is a household toxicologist, and he's written a book, and he has many years of experience. He was actually trained as a household toxicologist, and he'll be telling us about that, how he got trained. But he also has worked on many houses in many places in many ways to reduce toxic chemical exposures. So he has a tremendous amount of experience, and he realized after working for many years as a household toxicology consultant, he started getting the symptoms from exposure to toxic chemicals that were in his clients' homes. And he realized that if his clients had had some written instructions and guidelines, that 95% of them could have solved their own household toxicology problems without him even going to their house. So he wrote this book. So he's got a lot to tell us about toxic chemicals in homes, how people react to them, and what you can do to fix them. His name is David Abbott, and he's the author of Healing Your Family with Practical Household Toxicology. Hi, David.
Hi, Deborah.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, and you?
Good, very good, very good. I'm very interested in having you tell your story about how you got interested in this, and in particular, household toxicologists, I've actually never heard that term before. Is there a whole field of household toxicology that I'm just not aware of?
Well, actually, I may have coined that phrase.
And it's a very good one.
There are not very many people who do this. And although, in fact, in China, they have started training people to do it.
Wow.
The government actually does that.
There's a whole field of biology, which I think may be slightly different from what you do, because I think that you focus on the toxic chemicals, and bowel biology includes all kinds of things, electromagnetic fields, molds, and all these other things. But they include toxic chemicals, but they aren't as trained as I think you are, or as trained as, I mean, I'm not trained by somebody. I'm trained by 30 years of my own research.
Sure.
So I think that most people don't have that. But so tell us how you got interested in this in the first place.
Well, actually, before I do that, I think very highly of biobiology. It's total common sense and very practical, and it works. Around 1973, I started noticing that I was chemically sensitive. I started putting two and two together. When I use this product, I start to feel this way. When I use that product, I get sleepy or confused and that sort of thing. And I found that if I didn't use those chemicals, I felt better. And so I started studying the toxins in building materials and building practices, because I was a general contractor and I spent most of my time building houses and repairing or remodeling or maintaining them. And I started reading all of the fine print on the labels of the materials that I used, and the MSDS sheets, the material safety data sheets, and spent a lot of time at the University of Washington engineering and medical libraries studying indoor air quality, airflow in and around houses, the ASHRAE textbooks, and that sort of thing. And I studied with a guy who has a PhD in toxicology from the University of Washington, a mycologist who worked for the Seattle Health Department, and some chemists and biochemists, a physicist, electrical and biochemical engineers, a medical doctor who specialized in environmental medicine, and EPA department experts.
Yeah, so you have a lot of training. And you mentioned to me that that there was a household toxicology program in the early 1980s that you were part of. Do you know anything about how that came together? It sounded from your description like there was actually a program where people were being trained to learn what you know.
It was. And technically, I'm not supposed to mention it to you because they said they didn't want anyone to use the training from that program to make money or to engage in other activities besides their program.
Okay.
But,
is that program still existing? Because I've never heard of a program like that.
Well, as far as I know, it is. I haven't talked with them in some time. And I actually broke off with them because they were being funded by two groups that were using the program to collect data about homeowners' use of toxic chemicals for their own studies. And So it turned out that was actually the main goal of the program, rather than teaching the program participants how to protect themselves from the exposures while they were doing the consultations.
Did you find that once you were trained, you had mentioned, I think, in your email to me about your book, that after you started doing these consultations that you became more chemically sensitive?
Yeah.
Did you find doing the work actually affected your health?
Yes, I did, very much so. There's a lot of, typically when people have health issues that don't respond to conventional or alternative medical treatment, they are being exposed to chemical toxins or sometimes mold and pollen and animal dander and that kind of thing in their own house. And sometimes their use of insecticides was so excessive as to be really frightening. Insecticides are usually neurotoxins, and insects and human beings have brains and nervous systems that operate through the exact same basic biochemical mechanisms. And so any insecticide that poisons insects by attacking their brain and nervous system does the exact same thing to people.
Yes.
So it's kind of frightening to use insecticides, especially when we consider that most of the insects that we poison are not really dangerous to us.
Exactly right. I that was something that I came to many, many years ago. I don't remember the last time I used a pesticide because I've been doing this for so long. But I came to a point where I said, well, wait a minute, do I really want to spray toxic chemicals in my house because I have flies? I could put up screens and are spiders so bad? And, it's like you start instead of, I think that we're trained to see insects as being pests that need to be eradicated by poisons.
Yes.
By watching television and general society. But when I started becoming more aware of nature myself, I started thinking, well, wait a minute, these insects, these are all part of the ecosystem, and I just need to put up a barrier and say, you stay out there, and this is my house. And
sure.
I don't need to spray them.
Yes. Yeah. And you can get a spray bottle and fill it with what we have available here locally at the liquor stores is something called diesel, which is not diesel oil or diesel fuel. It's actually about 90% or so pure grain alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the same type of alcohol that we drink in beer or whiskey or whatever. But if you spray a fly or a bee or a wasp or a hornet with this stuff from one of those hand spray bottles,
mm-hmm.
it just drops right out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
so,
yes.
Yeah, and much easier to deal with.
Much easier. And there's so many solutions. There's so many things that we can do instead of things that are toxic. We need to go to break, but when we come back, we'll talk more. I'm Deborah Lindad. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio, and my guest today is David Abbott. He's the author of Healing Your Family with Practical Household Toxicology. And this is a brand new book. It's just barely available. But if you would like a copy, you can email David and just go to toxicfreetalkradio.com. Look for the description of this show and you can get his email address that way. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is David Abbott. He's the author of Healing Your Family with Practical Household Toxicology. David, could you tell us some stories about toxic exposures you've seen in homes and how they were affecting people?
Sure. There was a girl named Amy whose mother called and asked if I could help her. She kept getting lung infections, and she had memory loss that was making her college work difficult. And her doctor said, I don't know why you keep getting sick, because you have a good attitude, you eat a good diet, you do 45 minutes of aerobics every day. You seem to be doing everything right. And he had her on a bronchodilating inhaler, a steroid inhaler, and she had to take cycles of antibiotics, but the lung infections kept coming back. And in inspecting her apartment, I found a leaking furnace gasket and a leaking can of insecticide. And when she fixed the furnace and got rid of the insecticide, the lung infections disappeared. She started getting better grades in school with less effort, and her doctor took her off all the drugs. And this actually makes sense, because the carbon monoxide leaking out of the furnace is something that's known to cause memory loss, and the insecticide can make people more vulnerable to lung infections. It weakens the immune system. And so a lot of times when people aren't responding to medical treatment, it's because they're being exposed to toxins.
And I think that that's a very important sentence that you just said. A lot of times when people aren't responding to medical treatment, it's because they're being exposed to toxins. Because I've been saying for a long time that that right now today, people are being so exposed. Everybody is being exposed. And so and there's all these illnesses that people are having. You can do all the medical treatment, whether it's standard medical treatment or alternative medical treatment. And if you are exposed to toxic chemicals, you're still going to be sick. You still are going to be sick if you're being exposed to toxic chemicals. And that's just the fact of it today. And so if anybody wants to be healthy, the first thing is address your toxic exposures, because everybody has them. And people say to me, but I'm not sick. Well, it's only a matter of time. It really is only a matter of time, because they're there. They're making your body sick. And that's just the truth of the matter today.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times what I run into is one of the people in the house will say, I don't know why you say you react to this chemical, because I don't react to it at all. And their assumption is that everybody's going to react in precisely the same way to the same chemical. But truthfully, we each have a different balance of health in our liver, kidneys, lungs, brain, endocrine system, and all the rest. And so it isn't really possible to predict how a given person is going to react to a given toxin.
And that's right.
In fact, a friend of mine who has a doctorate in chemistry from Berkeley told me that no government or research institute or private clinic or hospital or industry has enough time and money and technical expertise to determine how a specific person will react to a specific combination of toxins. And this incredible complexity of the issue actually simplifies it, because, as you said, if we reduce our exposure to chemicals simply as a rule, it can only help us.
I did a lot of research in the beginning when I first learned that my body was getting sick from toxic chemical exposure in my home, which totally shocked me, because at that time I thought that the government was removing toxic chemicals from everything, but that's not the case at all. And I did all this research because I was trying to say, okay, here's my list of symptoms. I have headaches. I have insomnia. I have depression. And what are the products in my home that are causing those? And so, like, I could I could see that if I sprayed hairspray on, then I would get a headache. I could see that as I did my research, I learned that formaldehyde on bed sheets causes insomnia. I had to put those pieces of data together to figure that out. But I found that in separate books, and I put it all together, and I went, oh, my permanent press sheets have formaldehyde, and formaldehyde causes insomnia. And I changed my sheets, and I could sleep. It just solved that, just like that. But on a larger scale, you can't always make those associations that are that precise. And that what I found was that if I were to just remove all the toxic chemicals I possibly could, then it would make my body healthier just in general. And I think that that's what people need to do instead of saying, well, I have cancer or I'm impotent or whatever. Sure, there are classes of chemicals that relate to these things. But say you removed all the carcinogens from your life, but you still have all the neurotoxins, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and another thing that we often run into is when people start hearing about all of these toxins, they say, I don't feel safe. I worry all the time. I don't feel safe in my house. I don't feel safe going out in public. But the thing that we need to remember is that we just do what we can do at the time and take steps other than getting rid of toxins, you know, such as eating a good diet, having a good attitude, meditating, doing yoga, tai chi, qigong, this kind of thing, even just going for a walk every day. And these things can be really beneficial.
Yes, and there are all kinds of detox things that I write about. And, you know, it's just there are so many things that we can do that if we actually, I was just writing in one of my blogs, Toxic Free Body, I was writing about, you know, that old song, Accentuate the Positive. I even put a video of that song in the blog post because so many times we focus on what is the negative aspect of things, but there's always something positive. There's always a positive and there's always a negative in any situation. And so the negative is that toxic chemicals are all around us and poisoning us. But the positive is there's a whole lot of other things that we can do that aren't toxic, and we can keep making those choices, keep accentuating the positive, keep doing the things that remove toxic chemicals from our body, take them out of our homes, help reduce toxics in our communities. And there's so much we can do. There's so much we can do.
Definitely.
I think that we've come up to the break. So this is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is David Abbott, author of Healing Your Family with Practical Household Toxicology. And you can go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com and look for today's show, and it has his email address where you can email him and get information on how to order his book. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is David Abbott, and he is the author of a book called, I just moved your book, and so it's not sitting in front of me, Healing Your Family with Practical Household Toxicology. So, David, let's talk about some things that you have, some solutions to these problems that, what is... You've looked at so many houses. What is the most common thing that you find, and what do you tell people to do about it?
Well, the most common thing I found that I think is the most dangerous is insecticide use. But there's also a lot of just really simple stuff that actually doesn't take any effort or any money to solve. For instance, a woman told me that she always needed to use her asthma inhaler when she was cooking dinner. And so she had a gas stove, and I said, you cook on the front burners, right? And she said, yeah. And I said, okay, let's turn on the front burner and take a smell of the air when that burner is on. And I showed her how to identify the smell of the combustion fumes from the gas flame. And then I said, now you've got a vent stove or a vent fan here above the stove. Let's turn it on. And she turned it on, and I said, now pretend that you're stirring a pot on this front burner. In fact, let's put a pot full of water there and stir the water with a spoon. And when she did that, she could still smell the combustion fumes, even though the vent fan was on. Because, to be honest, there isn't any vent fan that will remove the combustion fumes from the front burners when you're stirring something on the stove. So I showed her just to cook on the back burner, and when she did that, she didn't need her asthma inhaler when she was cooking.
Well, see, now that's exactly the kind of quick and easy and practical thing that everybody should know, and we don't know. I mean, I've been studying this for more than 30 years, and I didn't know that.
In fact, I didn't know it until she asked me.
But then we figured it out.
I was thinking, how could this happen? Why would she need her inhaler?
Yeah.
Well, the only thing she's being exposed to here could be combustion fumes, because that's the only thing that changes when she turns on the stove.
Right, right.
So, yeah, really simple.
But you figured out, here's the thing that you figured out, I think, is, I would figure out that she was being exposed to combustion fumes, but it would never occur to me that how the hood vent is pulling up the fumes or not pulling up the fumes from the front burners versus the back burners. It just would never occur to me.
But that kind of opens
the door. Just knowing that opens the door, people who are listening to this, it opens the door to being able to use a gas stove maybe for some people who can't use them.
Yeah, I actually use an electric stove for that reason. But a lot of people assume that just because they have a vent fan that it works perfectly. But in all the years that I've done consultations, I don't think I've ever seen one vent fan that was properly maintained. And when they're not working right, they don't work efficiently. And even when they are working as they were specifically designed to work, most of them actually still don't get all of the fumes out. And so it's you got to figure ways around this sort of thing. And a lot of times, even the building codes don't really protect people against a lot of sources of toxins. You know, as you've pointed out in your books and on your show about toxins in building materials, and they're approved by the building departments. They're fine with them.
Right.
And
we
yet
need
there's
building
toxins
codes.
In them.
We need building codes that protect us from toxics. I love that.
Yeah. Real building codes.
Yeah.
Maybe usually,
I need to write my own building codes.
That'd be good. Yeah, I think typically the building codes are quite a few years behind common knowledge. And they only catch up with common knowledge when enough people say, hey, come on, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
There was actually a building code here where I live where before you put the drywall in your house, you had to put a solid layer of plastic sheeting all around the stud walls and then put the drywall on. And what was happening is the moisture from the air that people exhale and from showers and cooking and laundry was going through the drywall, which it does. It goes through the paint and through the drywall. It would hit the plastic and condense there because the plastic was colder than the inside air, and then it would create mold in there. So there were mold infestations in virtually all of the new houses in this area.
Wow.
And the city got sued for it, and then they changed the building code.
Wow.
But, these building codes, a lot of times, they're not real efficient.
Yeah. So what, I want to go back to insecticides for a second.
Yeah.
So if insecticides are the most common, then obviously you tell people to stop using them. But what about the insecticides that are already in the home?
Yeah, that's really an issue in a lot of parts of the South where they would take, I forget the name of it, but it's a really potent insecticide, and they would take like 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 pounds of it.
Ooh.
And just put it in on the building site in the center of the house on the dirt and then build the house over it. And their logic was this will kill termites or fire ants or whatever other kinds of insects might get into the house. But the problem is it hurts people too.
Yes.
And it's, yeah, there's got to be other ways to deal with this stuff. One of my clients' daughters had a brain seizure, and the doctors at a major university hospital didn't know why, and they didn't know whether she would have more. They prescribed a potent psychoactive drug that had very serious side effects. And when I inspected the house, I found 4 insecticides in the house, 3 in the lawn care products that they stored in the attached garage, and 1, a leaking can of bee spray in the laundry room. And what people need to understand is that all of those spray cans of insecticide leak, even when they're brand new.
Yeah.
And in fact, you can walk down the aisle in any hardware store. Yeah, and you can smell the insecticide in that aisle because the valves leak. They're made out of very soft thermoplastic, and they simply don't work properly.
Yeah.
And so the girl, for her own reasons, she didn't like the side effects. She refused to use the drug that they prescribed. Her parents got rid of the insecticides, and when the doctors read my written report, they said, yes, this is true. These 4 insecticides can cause brain seizures. And now, 8 years later, no seizures. She's healthy and happy. She has good friends and getting good grades in school.
Good. That's so good. See what a difference this makes. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Windad, and my guest today is David Abbott. He's the author of Healing Your Family with Practical Household Toxicology. And if you go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com, look for his show, and you can see his email address where you can write to him for more information on how to order the book. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is David Abbott, author of Healing Your Family with Practical Household Toxicology. David, I want to hear more about some of these easy fixes, like you just told us about cooking on the back burners of your gas stove.
Well, keeping the furnace well-maintained is really vital. Because all the air in the house, pretty much, except for in the closets and some corners, is cycled through the furnace if you have a forced air furnace.
Mm-hmm.
And most people use those blue or green-colored, really loose-weave furnace filters.
Mm-hmm.
And what they don't understand is that those filters are specifically designed to keep large clumps of dust out of the furnace blower motor.
Right.
They're not actually designed to keep dust out of the house. And there's been studies, and virtually all samples of household dust in America have the heavy metal lead and the long band insecticide DDT and lots of other toxins in them, because dust is like a sponge for toxins.
Right.
And they make high-efficiency furnace filters that really do a pretty darn good job of filtering out dust and pollen and mold spores, yeast spores, this kind of thing. But the key thing is not only to use these furnace filters, they have to be changed when they're dirty. And so you buy 2 at the same time, and you keep 1 in the plastic wrap. And you check it, you know, every month or so until you're familiar with how it's going. And you compare the filter that's in the furnace to the new one that's in the wrap. And when you can see the difference in the color between the new one and the one in the furnace, it's time to change it. And
well, see, another thing I didn't know. That's a really good tip.
And if you have asthma or any other respiratory or immune system disorder, when you change the furnace filter, you want to wear a good dust mask.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of dust mask to wear is the same kind that most dentists and doctors use. It's the accordion fold, very soft, almost cloth-like filter with the ear loops. And because those harder cone dust masks don't really work, they let dust in around the corners, around the edges. So you simply put the used furnace filter into a garbage bag and put it in the trash and put in a new one. But you don't want to use the antimicrobial furnace filters because those contain chemicals that are registered with the EPA as insecticides.
Right.
And insecticides are not safe for us.
Right. We don't want them blowing all through. What you don't want to do is take insecticides and put them in our HVAC system and have them blow all around the house.
Yep, that's right. And, you know, I found that a lot of people say, I've used so many toxic chemicals for so long that it wouldn't make any difference if I stopped now, so why bother being careful?
Oh, good. Answer that question.
But, you know, that's like saying I've hit my thumb with a hammer so many times that it wouldn't make any difference if I stopped. And, in fact, I think I'll hit my thumb with a hammer right now just to prove it. And no one would do that with a hammer, and yet so many people do it with toxic chemicals.
Why do you think that we still have so many toxic chemicals when there's so much evidence that they're harmful?
Part of the reason is that we are genetically hardwired to be afraid of fire, to be afraid of falling, to be afraid of abandonment, you know, these kind of really basic, visceral, emotional triggers. But toxic chemicals haven't been around long enough for us to have a genetically hardwired fear or concern about them. And so it's basically information-based. And a lot of people don't have the information. And then when you get into insecticides and some weed poisons and moss poisons and things, then there's the neurotoxic effect to be dealt with, because actually I have seen people who I believe were using insecticides to self-medicate in the same way that many people use alcohol or recreational drugs, where they have these issues that are difficult for them to deal with and face, and they're not sure what to do about them. And they have found through experience that if they spray some bee poison or some ant poison or some, you know, fly poison or whatever, that they feel better, you know, that those emotions disappear.
Mm-hmm.
The reason they disappear or seem to disappear is because the insecticides attack the nervous system and prevent certain circuits in the brain from functioning properly. And it's not the best way to deal with those issues.
No, it isn't. It isn't. Wow. I've heard that about painters in the past. That painters get addicted to the toxic chemicals in paint. And so, you know, they actually get withdrawals and things.
Yeah.
And so they have to keep painting, and then they just get sicker and sicker and sicker, you know, kind of like with any drug or cigarettes or anything like that. That these are all related chemicals, and that our bodies can get addicted to them. And I think that that's actually a thing that we should be considering more, is how people are getting addicted to the toxic chemicals in their homes. That's not
Definitely.
Talked about much.
Yeah. And there is a neurologist named Barry Sterman, S-T-E-R-M-A-N. And he found that when he was hired by NASA, because the astronauts were getting exposed to rocket fuel, of course, when they were shooting up into the atmosphere. And the exposure to rocket fuel was causing epileptic seizures.
Mm.
And that's the last thing you want an astronaut to be having.
Right.
So, and what Sterman found is that when he did neurofeedback on cats and then exposed them to that particular toxin, the cats didn't react to the toxin. They had no apparent reaction whatsoever. And what he was training them to do was to exhibit strong SRM, sensory motor brainwaves. And those are the brainwaves that a cat has when it's sitting by a mouse hole and patiently waiting for the mouse to pop its head out.
Mm-hmm.
The cat's totally relaxed, but totally alert. And that brainwave state helps people, apparently, to resist the effects of toxic chemicals. And I have found that to be true in my case. although I certainly wouldn't advise anyone to get neurofeedback and then say, now I can use chemicals.
No.
But I would advise people who are having symptoms of chemical exposure to try neurofeedback and see if it can help them deal with the symptoms.
Well, you know, I hear people say, I'm chemically sensitive, or that they've been poisoned by something, and they say, how can I be tolerant to be around these toxic chemicals? Now, I understand where they're coming from, because having been in that situation myself in the past, I understand that you want to just be able to be in a normal environment and not react to it. But mm-hmm. the thing that I think that most people aren't realizing is that when they ask that question, they're saying, how can I be in around poison and not have the normal reaction to it that would tell you that it's toxic and you shouldn't be around it?
Yes. Yes.
And I think that people confuse, there's been so much information about multiple chemical sensitivities, and I do believe that that there is such a thing as people being sensitive to a chemical. But if we think of it only as a sensitivity, we miss the whole picture that they're poisons, and we're all being poisoned.
Right. Yes. I have a friend that I've talked with a lot about this stuff, and he found for him the perfect solution. When I talk about this stuff, he says, oh, yes, you are chemically sensitive. And what I say is just what you said. No, wait a minute. These are actually poisonous chemicals. Mm-hmm. And even people who think that they're not reacting almost undoubtedly are. I knew a guy years ago when I was in construction. He was like 6'4", built like a football linebacker, one of the most powerful people I've ever met in my life, and just full of life. And he was exposing himself every day in his work to these toxic chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he visited me, and he was like skin and bones. And I said, hey, what's going on? And he said, well, I've got cancer.
Yeah.
And a couple months later, he was dead. And yeah. I found myself thinking, that was a gamble that didn't work.
Yeah. You know, I don't tell this story very often, but when I was much younger, and oh, actually, I'm not going to tell this story because we only have 30 seconds left. So thank you so much for being with us, David. And your book is very interesting. I've been reading bits and pieces of it, and there's a lot of information in there. Remember, listeners, you can go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com, get David's email address, and find out how you can order his book. This is ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com. Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad. Be well.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you, David.